Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You done fell right down that rabbit hole, so reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on the show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder, mayhem, tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you're by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Paul, and their dog Ninja.
And sometimes their cat Freddy, but never the ferrets.
Hey, yeah. This is Tommy Chong. Right now you're listening to the Hillbilly Horror Stories. Ooh, gotta listen to them.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 361 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy, we always like to start off by thanking all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country we represent. Thanks for everything that you guys, girls, and service animals do for us on a daily basis.
And you know that's right. We got you guys. We pray for you every day. And we just appreciate you guys so much. Thank you for all you do for our country.
Tracy, in the U.S., we are coming upon a holiday, Independence Day, and like all holidays, it triggers some people's bad memories.
Yeah,
for the times that they've spent on maybe a cookout or something with people that are no longer with us, and it really brings on people that have PTSD.
Yep,
it's a really bad situation with the 4th of July.
Yeah.
So between all that stuff, it's just a lot of negative things that can happen around a holiday with people's mindsets.
Yeah, that's very true.
So we just want people to realize that, hey, if you need to talk to somebody, we're here. The group is there. And we just want you to know you're not alone. Feel free to talk to somebody. It's not an embarrassment to struggle with any of those things.
No, not at all. No, not at all. We guys are here for you. And the group is wonderful. Again, we are so blessed to have that group. If you want to reach out elsewhere, you can call the crisis hotline at 988 and you can text at 741.
Tracy, we've got a special guest tonight, Chris McKennell.
Yeah.
That name may not ring a bell to a lot of people, but his grandparents' name definitely will. Because his grandparents are Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Yeah.
And Chris obviously grew up with them. He was trained by them. Went on, you know, like I know Chris mentioned to me, like the haunting in Connecticut.
Yeah.
That was actually his case.
Oh, is that right?
I mean, incredible guy. He heads up the Warren Legacy Foundation of Paranormal Research, help out people all over the world. And You know, I've not always been the biggest advocate of his grandparents. I've, you know, questioned some of their methods and some of their reasoning behind stuff. And I actually brought that up to him. I didn't want to be a hypocrite.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a nice chat. I think you guys are gonna really enjoy Chris. He's a solid guy, and I think he's doing a lot of good in the world.
Good for him.
So, and then we're probably gonna have him back on,
mm-hmm,
because we didn't get into it much on the air. But man, this guy has overcome a lot of obstacles in his life.
Really?
Yeah. The fame part of things was not good for him.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And he was telling me that, you know, a lot of his family has pretty much disowned him.
Oh.
And, you know, but he's made it through. He's lived in 90 different locations.
Wow.
As far as cities and stuff like that. Yeah. And, you know, but he wants to come on again and actually just have a talk about overcoming obstacles and how he's, you know, taking negatives and turning them into positives.
Good for him.
So I'm excited about that one as well.
Yeah, good for him.
All right, Tracy, so...
On the other hand...
Yes?
Lily ate her poop.
I can't believe we're still talking about this.
Gosh, it was so gross. That is the nastiest. So I was like, oh yeah, go kiss Jerry in the mouth. He loves it. Poop breath. Oh, I hope she never does that again. I might have to disown her. Sorry.
Well, Tracy, cities like St. Augustine, Savannah, Charleston, and of course, New Orleans, they're known to be some of the most haunted cities in America.
Definitely.
And the things that these cities have in common is they... Seems like, anyway, it's not obviously not the case, but it seems like they have more haunted locations than they do non-haunted locations.
I know, right?
These are mostly bigger cities, though. But there are some smaller cities out there with quite the reputation for being haunted as well. Think Alton, Illinois, or Atchison, Kansas, home of the Sally House. Another one of these smaller haunted cities is just outside of Houston, Texas. And it's the Old Town Spring.
Where's that at? I mean, what city's that in?
It's technically it's in Spring, Texas. Oh. So Old Town Spring is kind of like Louisville as Louisville. Then you have Old Louisville.
Okay.
So this is kind of where it's like I said, it's about 20 miles north of Houston.
Okay.
Is exactly where Spring is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot bigger town than what it used to be. But this... They've pretty much redone the old original part.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to talk about a bunch of that today. So, you know, another town that's very similar to that would be Williamsburg in Virginia.
Uh-huh.
Because you've got Colonial Williamsburg, which is part of the city that was completely redone. And if I had to pick a place that I would say mirrors this one, it would probably be Colonial Williamsburg.
All right.
Because you got a lot of the old buildings and stuff.
Yeah.
And then if you remember in Colonial Williamsburg, they imported a lot of the old buildings. Mm-hmm. They kind of moved them to that section. And
wow.
You're going to find they kind of did the same thing here.
Okay. Like they actually moved the building?
Yes.
Like put it on a...
What? I don't know how they moved. We've had this discussion like 10,000 times on this show.
But, oh, I know.
But
I don't know
how they moved. But they
You
do.
Know what? I've actually seen that in person. A person moved this house that had been there forever and ever. And I'll tell you, it's something to see. It really is. I don't know how in the world they did it without breaking stuff, but they did.
So let's discuss a little bit of history of the town itself. I don't want to get too deep into the history, though, because there's a lot of haunted locations to discuss here, and we're only going to be able to touch on a couple of them. I will note that the land that Old Spring and Spring is on was first occupied by the Orkokizek Native Americans. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right.
Mm-hmm.
The name comes up several times.
Okay.
But every time I tried to look them up, like every story about Old Spring brings them up. But when I went to try to do the Google search, I couldn't find anything on them.
Really?
So I couldn't find a pronunciation or anything like that.
Well, I'm sure you did just fine.
Well, apparently there's probably not many of them around these days, I don't think.
Yeah, that's sad.
So, in the early 1800s, settlers actually began to make their way to this part of the country. The area began to flourish right after Texas won their independence from Mexico. That was in 1836. That's the same year that Houston was actually founded on the banks of the Buffalo Bayou. For the next 9 years, settlers steadily migrated to this area as part of the Republic of Texas. But in 1845, Texas became part of the United States.
Very interesting.
In the 1870s, railroad tracks were constructed to go all the way down to Houston, and that kicked off a rapid industrialization for the area. In fact, the railroad workers named the town.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, it's actually a funny story about it. They'd been working all through the winter.
And I think they should be able to name it. They did all the hard work.
Well, theoretically.
Yeah.
I mean, they built the railroad. They didn't actually build the town.
Well, I know, but I'm glad they got to do that at least.
But they were excited because by the time they got to Houston, which, you know, of course, that area is warm.
Mm-hmm.
They'd been working all winter time in the freezing cold.
Yeah.
Doing all that, the treacherous weather. And then they make it. It's springtime. They're in the Houston area. It's nice and warm. So they called it Camp Spring. And the reason they called it Camp Spring is because the railroad workers that were there, they all basically set up camp. They had tents and stuff. That was their lodging.
Wow. So well, at least it was warm.
Camp Spring. Yeah.
Yeah, at least it was warm and they could, you know, stand the elements.
Now, in 1873, Camp was actually dropped from the settlement name and it became just Spring after that. And it became the base operation for the railroad workers.
But I wonder why they dropped it.
I guess because you don't have very many cities named Camp.
That's true.
And now it's a city, mm-hmm. not a camping location or whatever.
Yeah, not a much tents.
Right. It's not one of those campgrounds, KOA.
Oh, that's true.
Spring experienced some pretty steady growth over the next 50 years, even while the country as a whole was struggling. In fact, in 1901, Spring became a crossroads for two different intersecting railroad lines.
Oh, cool.
They added a roundhouse and 14 different track yards.
Wow. And
a roundhouse, by the way, because I was curious.
Yeah.
It literally is... Think about a building that's set up as a half circle, like the shape of a macaroni noodle.
Uh-huh.
And it was designed that way to be able to, they could work on trains and the train cars and stuff like that. It was basically like a giant workshop, but it was shaped like a semicircle.
Well, I'll be dang.
The following year, in 1902, several businesses actually started up there in Spring. This would include an opera house, a hospital, a lumber mill, a bank, hotels, and of course, saloons.
Sounds like a good time to me.
Businesses flourished until the railroad decided they were going to relocate to Houston in 1923. That move actually crippled the city. Local merchants started going out of business, and it almost became a ghost town.
But why they do that? Why would you do that?
I guess maybe, well, I mean, Houston was a bigger city probably. And I mean, you're looking at 50 years down the road. I probably just figured it was a better outfit for them to move to Houston.
So does any of those, so none of the stores or any of those couldn't move to the Houston, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, I guess they probably could have, but I mean, it's probably pretty hard to just pick up your business and your life and move it to a different city.
Yeah, well, that's a shame.
Then came Prohibition, which even forced the saloons to close down. That, along with the Great Depression in the 1930s, pretty much decimated the town until the late 1960s. That's when local merchants started opening up their businesses to take advantage of the booming oil business in Houston.
Very good.
The new section of Spring, which was the original settlement, became known as Old Town Spring.
Good. I like that name.
Old Town Spring flourished throughout the 1970s and the 1980s, and it's now actually one of the most visited tourist attractions in Texas every single year.
Yay! Well, I guess they did the right thing.
We were supposed to go there when we went to Houston.
Uh-huh.
Dolly actually was meeting with some TV people because they were going to do a television show.
Yeah, she was.
And that's the same day that as we were coming through, we got hit with major storms. Remember, we almost hit a tree that crossed the road.
Yeah, we did. That was scary.
Well, the tree didn't cross the road. It fell on the road.
Yeah. But that whole storm thing was like scary as heck.
Yeah, they had tornadoes and stuff go through there. And it cost us about 3 hours worth of travel time. So we were going to stop on the way to Houston. And we didn't get a chance to do that. Plus, it was downpouring rain the whole time.
Yeah.
But that was the intention.
Well, maybe another time.
And then we were going to hook up with Dina Marie later that night when we finally got in and got settled. She went, I think she went without it. No, we were going to go. I was going to go because you were going to stay at the hotel. I was going to go with her to do a ghost tour of Old Town Spring. And then they called her after she had bought the tickets and canceled.
Get
so
out.
They weren't going to do it. Well, the weather got bad.
It got bad again? Oh, man.
So almost got a chance to make it.
Twice.
And, and that was 2019. And that's how long I've been talking about doing a story on this place.
Mm.
Tracy, at one point before the resurgence in 1980, one of the only remaining buildings from the glory days was the Wunshi building, which was originally a saloon there. Well, it was a restaurant, a saloon, and a hotel. Uh-huh. In 1946, the Spring Cafe opened up in the old building. It soon became famous for their 1-inch thick hamburgers and onion rings, plus their chocolate silk pie.
Oh, I bet that was good.
People would drive from Houston to eat there. And that was, like I said, about a 30-minute drive back then. The building was in really rough shape. There was no matching tables or chairs. The screens hung off the windows.
Oh, my gosh.
There were holes in the floor, and there were burned-out sections in the wall. But the food was great.
Oh, that's usually what happens when you find a little rundown dive like that.
I mean, I've heard places like called a hole in the wall, but that's
that's literal, yeah.
Oh, and climbing the front steps took some real courage, apparently.
Oh, gosh, because it would have busted through?
I think so.
Oh,
there's some speculation that the hamburgers and stuff were so good because the grease on the grill had been there since the Wunshi brothers opened the place in 1902.
Well,
you laugh, but I don't know.
I can imagine.
I don't know that that's necessarily a joke.
Oh, I mean, I don't mind a little leftover grease on the stove, but that's like too many years.
Back in the heyday, the Wunshi brothers was the place to go to find trouble. The ladies would hang out on the front porch and wave their handkerchiefs at the passing trains. Them rebels.
Yeah. At least they didn't show their boobies.
Well, we don't know that they didn't. Because this was also a hotel, a saloon, and a brothel.
Mm-hmm.
During Prohibition, it was the last bar that was actually closed. Because they put up kind of a fight. Everybody else was like, oh, it is what it is. Prohibition.
Yeah.
And again, for people who are out of the country, Prohibition is basically when the government outlawed liquor. So nobody could sell liquor. And that's when all the moonshining and the illegal operations happened. And eventually they just said, this is not going to work. There's just no way to outlaw it and make it work.
Yeah.
So. But anyway, that's what Prohibition was. So they shut down all the bars and stuff. And a lot of the bars that became speakeasies, or they hid liquor, or they became soda shops or restaurants or whatever they could do to try to stay in business. But
do you remember the name of that moonshine Tanya had?
Not right off.
Oh, shoot. I have to ask her. That was some good stuff right there.
It was like a candy or I don't remember what it was.
Okay, I can't remember either. I just remember it was really good.
It was like Orange Dreamsicle or something. It was like this is not interesting to anybody other than
us. I don't know.
But it was like a type of banana pudding.
Oh, that's right. Look, if y'all want to try some good moonshine, get the banana pudding because you will love it.
Yeah, it was Old Smoky.
Ooh, love it. But I don't think you have to go to Gatlinburg to get it.
There's a lot of liquor stores and stuff that carry Old Smoky. All right, so back when Prohibition came through and they eventually forced them to close, the sheriff's department came out. They took all the liquor. They lined up all the bottles out on the street in front of the saloon, and they shot them with their guns.
What a waste.
I don't know why they wouldn't have just poured them out, or why. I guess they just wanted to be jerks about it.
Yeah.
But probably because of the Wunshi brothers gave them such hell about closing down.
Oh, I'm sure.
That was probably their way of doing it.
I wonder how many people are out there licking the ground.
Lily would have been.
Yeah.
So 8 years ago, there was a huge fire, and the place was pretty much completely remodeled, but it was remodeled to be like it was back in the day. Oh,
good. That's good.
And it was sold again 4 years ago. It's reopened now, from my understanding, but it's only been reopened for like the last year or so.
Well, good. I like they keep on, you know, keeping on there. Don't
they also kept a lot of the, there was some stuff that was able to be salvaged in there, like some artwork and stuff like that. Really? And they kept all that stuff.
Good.
And of course, it's got the reputation of being haunted. Mary Beth Benson, she's the former manager there. And she's had the pleasure of seeing the telephone receiver pick up, float in the air, and throw itself to the floor.
Wow, that's cool. I'd like to see that.
She's also had the music on the jukebox change right in the middle of a song, and water turn off and on in the kitchen areas when she was there.
Maybe they just didn't like the song they were playing.
The main haunting here is said to be from the Wunschy brothers. Now, the place was started by Frank, Charlie, and Otto. Those are the three brothers. This family, the Wunschy brothers, or the Wunschy family, was very significant in the town. Like, they, the high school there is named after them because they donated the land to have it done. They've got their own little personal cemetery right outside of town. It's got like 20 graves in it. It's almost all Wunschy brothers.
Wow, that's so nice.
Or their dad. But yeah, they had a lot of money. But they didn't have a problem helping the community out.
Very cool.
So the three brothers here started it, Frank, Charlie, and Otto. And like I said, they're all buried in that cemetery a short part of the way. But the other brother, Frank, he owned the lumber mill that actually built the Wunschy Brother Cafe and Saloon.
Oh.
And I think it was across the street at the time.
That worked out well.
Yeah. The name of the building changed from Wunschy Brothers to Spring Cafe. That was during the 1940s, but they changed the name back to the Wunschy Brothers back in the 1980s when all the resurgence and stuff was going on. The ghost of Charlie is known to wander around and be mischievous. He likes to open and close doors, push open cabinets, and knock things over. Some think that Charlie started the fire.
Really? Actually,
yeah, because it was in the new section of the building, and some people said that he didn't like the new section. Maybe that was his way of getting rid of it.
Well, it's sort of like that ghost shit.
What ghost?
You know, when you make yourself, the movie The Ghost, when you make yourself able to hit objects and stuff like that. But you have to concentrate. But.
Right. Well, the restaurant reopened in 2021. And since then, people have said that they see Charlie Wunschy staring out of the top window. They even said, like, the night of the fire, by the way, I'll backtrack a little bit. People say that they saw a candle lit up there, and it was after hours, but they're saying they saw a candle lit up in that window.
Well, that sounds pretty shady to me.
And so that's why some people think it might have been Charlie. So what exactly is Charlie's story? Well, he supposedly had fallen in love with a woman who didn't really have the same feelings for him. We've all been there. Are you listening to me, Megan Fox? There's no need to send legal paperwork. Anyways.
In your dreams, buddy.
Charlie lived the rest of his life brokenhearted until he died in 1935. He died in an upstairs room in that building. People never realized, though, that he was depressed because he always put on a smile and he acted happy. He would help out at tables, and he always wanted to make sure that the rooms were clean and had everything in them that needed to be there. He was very meticulous about details.
I mean, that was just one girl. There's several women in this world. Why didn't he go for somebody else?
Why can't you just let the folklore be folklore?
I don't know. He just gave up too early.
Well, Charlie isn't the only spirit here. There's also Dell, D-E-L-L. I'm not sure exactly what her story is, but I couldn't find anything else on her. But supposedly, she's somebody who haunts the place. Now, there was an artist who was staying in Charlie's old room. This was about a year after Charlie died. He dreamed about a man who looked upset. He had long white hair, a black hat, and a matching suit. He said that he was leaning over a table. You know how you like just kind of lean right. over and just look like you're sad. He stood up and he started pacing back and forth. And that's when the artist woke up. He couldn't go back to sleep, so he decided, hey, I'm an artist. I'm going to draw a picture of this guy. The following morning, he shows the employees his sketch. And much to their amazement, it was a picture of Charlie.
Oh, wow.
Who obviously this guy didn't know.
Yeah. Oh, Charlie had long hair. That's cool.
I saw a picture of him. I don't remember him having long hair in a picture I saw, though.
Mm-hmm. But is he cute?
He was old.
Oh, but he was cute. I think old men are adorable.
I mean, all I saw was a face, and it was from the side. So
okay.
Hard to tell. One former employee was spooked when someone, or at least she thought, entered the bathroom. Upon inspection, there was no one there. So she was understandably creeped out. So creeped out that she ran out of the bathroom. She said she never liked to be anywhere alone in the building.
I can understand that.
Many employees have claimed to see full-bodied apparitions and have been touched. On some nights, you can still hear Charlie's footsteps and kind of clanking around the saloon. He moves from room to room. He goes up and down the stairs. And he even likes to rock in his favorite rocking chair.
That's awesome.
Now, as we mentioned earlier, some have seen him looking out the upstairs window, and some have seen him sitting on the upstairs porch. Staff members would often rearrange furniture before closing up for the evening, but Charlie was not very big on change. So his spirit will move things back to where they were, and when the employees come in the next morning, everything was back where it was originally.
You sure it was my sister?
Ain't that the truth? She does move some furniture.
I know it.
As we mentioned, Charlie likes to be a little bit mischievous. Or mischievous. I don't know which way I said it. Either way.
Mischievous. It's not mischievous. That sounds dumb.
Well, it can be both. He likes to do some things to kind of irritate people. Like we said, knocking items over. But he also likes to move items to where they turn up missing only to turn up again somewhere strange where it shouldn't be. He also likes to unlock certain doors and lock other doors. He said sometimes when you'll go to open a door that you know is unlocked, it feels like somebody's pulling from the other side, so it won't allow you to open the door, and then it just all of a sudden just frees up.
And then the person on the other side goes and falls on their butt, right?
Yeah.
Nice.
There's also strange shadows that are seen moving around upstairs in the hallway area. All right, and we're going to do one last story here, and then we'll move on. The server, on one occasion, young lady, she was carrying a fresh pot of coffee through the upstairs hallway. And she sees an older man with white hair and a black suit. And she asks if he would like a fresh cup of coffee. And then he disappeared. She said a cold wind swirled all around her at the time he disappeared.
Guess he didn't want no coffee.
I would think if it was cold, that cold wind, he probably wanted some coffee. But
he was trying to cool it down, was he?
Yeah. So we wouldn't be able to put a dent in the Old Town Spring with this episode because, honestly, there are almost 50 supposedly haunted locations in Old Spring.
That's a bunch.
The question is, why are there so many in this small part of town? One guess is that some of these buildings were moved to Old Town Spring. So whatever was in that building
came with it.
Got moved. And that's right. You want a haunted town? That's how you get a haunted town. There are buildings that were moved in that are over 100 years old that were taken from other towns and just brought to Old Town Spring. As long as it was an old building and it fit the style, they would bring it in.
That is amazing. Wow.
So?
I wonder how long it took him to do that.
Oh, I'm sure it took several years.
Hmm.
I want to talk about a few of these locations here at Old Town Spring. Now, we're not going to get into quite the detail that we did with the Winchy Brothers, but I do want to talk about a couple of spots. And then, like I said, I'll probably end up doing another episode somewhere down the road on nothing but more places in Old Town Spring.
Because there's
enough to do like 5 episodes.
No way.
With that being said, the next place that I have to talk about is the Doll Hospital.
The Doll Hospital?
That's right.
What in the world is that?
And this is actually one of those buildings that was not original to Old Town Spring that was shipped in. The owner, her name is Marianne Pizzolatto. She does repairs and restoration on old dolls at the hospital. So if
she
pees
a lot? You have Pizzolatto.
So if you had like an old porcelain doll that mm-hmm. your grandmother had given you or something, but mm-hmm. it had a crack or something, that's the kind of stuff she does there. And trust me, she's worked on dolls from way as far back as the 1700s.
Wow.
There are plenty of creepy-ass dolls that are for sale there.
Oh, I bet there is. I didn't think you literally meant a doll hospital.
It's a doll hospital.
Well, that's kind of fun.
The owner says that she personally hasn't experienced anything in the old building, but that doesn't mean that there aren't stories. So, is the place haunted? Who knows? But the fact is that it is loaded with old-ass porcelain dolls, some with real human hair.
Ooh.
Some of these were designed to look just like the young girls who would have been playing with it back then. And so for that reason, stories of haunted dolls have been around here for years, and probably just as long as some people have had a fear of dolls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if I could handle having all those creepy dolls and if I was there by myself.
Do you know what the fear of dolls is called?
Mm-mm.
Pediophobia.
Pedio?
Pedio.
Hmm. Sure never heard of that word.
If someone has a doll that's determined to be haunted, they can still bring it to the doll hospital. And they'll take care of it there. When a doll comes in, especially one with a spirit attached, this can cause all kinds of havoc, as you could imagine. One time, according to some local lore, a mysterious package arrived at the hospital. Inside was an antique doll. Now, this doll was accompanied by a note from the family that requested them to repair and restore the doll for a sick family member. The doll itself was very old. It actually had been made in Germany in the late 1800s, so it was over 100 years old. The staff did not like this doll. They hated it, in fact, from the very beginning. But things really got strange when the restoration process began. So on one occasion, a worker walked down some stairs to get some supplies. That's when she was suddenly pushed. She tumbled down the stairs. When she reached the bottom of the stairs, she looked up and there was no one there.
She literally fell down the stairs?
Yes. Like a slinky.
You sure you're not talking about Becky?
I'm not.
Hmm. Man, that is creepy. Oh. Yeah, that's pretty creepy.
That same day, the doll's face was being cleaned. She felt a sharp pain on the tip of her finger. This happened just as she touched the doll's mouth. When she looked at her finger, it was bleeding.
Did the doll bite her?
I don't know. Could have just been a crack or
something
like that she ran her finger across.
And this is the same doll, right?
Yes, and the same person. And the same day. During the time that doll was at the hospital, it moved around. Several times, the employees would come in to find the doll at a completely different location from where it was when they left it the night before.
That's crazy.
Naturally, the workers there finished the doll in record time to get rid of it as quick as possible. All right, let's do one more short one. This is a location called the Blue Giraffe. It's a little store.
The Blue Giraffe.
It opened back in 2015. The building, though, has been there since 1913. It was originally the D. Kaplan Feed Store and Dry Goods. That rolls right off the tongue.
It does.
David Kaplan, his wife Bessie, owned the store. And their store was down on the first floor while the family lived up on the second floor. They had two sons, Bennett and Herman. In the 1920s, they renamed it to just Kaplan's. Probably a good move. And they moved across the street. So the original store was taken apart in two sections and relocated to its current location.
Amazing.
Martin Kaplan, which was David's grandson, or Bennett's son, for those of you keeping score at home, has seemed to have moved with the building itself.
Well, sometimes you just want to stay with your residence.
Martin had prided himself on maintaining a very close relationship with all of his customers. And as I said earlier, the Blue Giraffe opened up in this building in 2015. It's a coffee shop that actually serves beer and wine. It's a unique coffee shop.
Yeah.
The owner, Rhonda Lee Schwab, believes that the building is haunted. Why? Well, upstairs, they have a lamp. It's not unusual. A lot of people have a lamp. But the shade on the lamp will come off, and no matter how many times they put it back on, as soon as the shade is put back, it will soon be off again. That's not the only reason, though, that she feels like it's haunted. Though I have to admit, though, that would be enough for me.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
The store has a stuffed rabbit, and I'm assuming this is like a real taxidermied rabbit. One time it was found outside on a tree stump in front of the store. Now, this is a family-owned business and a family-run store, so no one in the family knew how in the world it got there. In fact, this rabbit had been kept in storage, and now it's outside on a tree stump. But here's the best part of that story. It occurred right around Easter.
Oh.
It gets stranger, though. The owner of Kudos, which is the store right next to it, she tells Rhonda that the previous owner of that building, it used to be called Home Sweet Home, when the gentleman had the business. And he would always set a rabbit on that exact same tree stump at Easter time.
Oh, man. That's so nice.
So there you go.
Very cool.
So there's your three stories of the almost 50 haunted locations. Mm-hmm. They're in the Old Town Spring.
Good. Yeah, I'd definitely like to go there for sure.
All right, Tracy, let's take a quick sponsor break. We'll be back to talk a little bit about some upcoming shows. And then, of course, we're going to have on Chris McKinnell from the Warren Legacy Foundation of Paranormal Research. And it's going to be a blast.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
All right, Tracy, so real quick, we are 2 weeks away from Buffalo.
Yes. Creeped up on us pretty quick.
Yep. Come out and see us. Come see Brohio and Justin Rimmel from Mysterious Circumstances. Special guest Tyler Allen from Minds of Madness. The award-winning Minds of Madness.
Yes.
Tyler just got back from CrimeCon over in England.
Oh, dude. How lucky was that?
Where Shane Waters is still at, I think.
Yep, I think he's
been
still
over
is.
For approximately 7 months. But, no, so we're excited about that. And then, of course, we got Detroit coming up. We've got Gatlinburg. Gatlinburg with Tony Merkel from The Confessionals. There's only 13 tickets left.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's so, very good.
Yeah. So you might want to snatch those up if you plan on going. But that's basically all we got. Don't forget that we got the cruise. All these tickets are available And then we've got the show Labor Day weekend. There's not a whole lot of tickets. No. So those left either up at the Bell Mansion in Fort Wayne.
We've sold a lot of those. That's awesome.
HillbillyHorrorStories.com. That's where you can get your tickets for all that stuff and get information on the cruise.
Nice.
What do you got going on over there?
All right. For our iTunes this week, we have Jason B., Henley Sparkle, Boots on the Floor, Kay Cummins, and Mojo Lobster. Thank you guys for taking your time out to do that for us. You guys rock.
Yes, and thanks to everybody again who, after last week, tuned in to listen to my new podcast with Amanda, Wickedly Weird. We've got a lot of good people, got a lot of good responses to the people who gave it an opportunity. So if you haven't tried it yet, we got 3 episodes out. There'll be another one coming out this Wednesday. But they're just stories that have a weird twist to them.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll like them.
Very cool.
All right, let's listen to Chris McKinnell. Hey, guys. You know, we try to bring you the best guest possible on this show. And every once in a while, we come across one that's even a little extra special as far as I'm concerned. And that's the case today. I've got Chris McKinnell on. And initially, you know, most people say, hey, man, this guy's pretty fascinating. He's an exorcist. And he's done a bunch of stuff when it comes to the paranormal. But he's the director of the Warren Legacy Foundation for Paranormal Research. And if that name sounds familiar, of course it does. It's the Warrens. And Chris is the grandson of Ed and Lorraine Warren. Chris, thanks for coming on, buddy.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate the chance to talk to you today.
Chris, before we get started and start diving deep into some of these other subjects, tell me about the Warren Legacy Foundation for Paranormal Research.
Absolutely. I'd love to. I mean, that's why I'm here, actually. The foundation is a worldwide organization of volunteers who help people who believe that they are being troubled by the paranormal. We do it anonymously and we do it for free. So if anybody is having trouble out there and they need help, go to www.warrenlegacyfoundation.com. There's a contact us link. On there, you'll have a Google form you fill out. Give us as much information as you can so that we can then get started helping you. Now, most of the time, you're going to think, you know, this is a horrifying, terrible thing that's happening to you. And I believe me, I do understand that. Growing up, I was pretty terrified of the things that I confronted. But 9 times out of 10, I promise you, it's not as bad as you think it is. And those footsteps you hear in the hall, or those things that flew across the room, it's just the spirit trying to get your attention. It could possibly be your grandmother. It could be the old man who lived in the house for 35 years and doesn't want to leave, and he's upset that you're in the house. But it's not necessarily an evil thing. It's just something that we can help you with.
Now, as far as the foundation, where can you help people at? Is this a worldwide foundation?
Absolutely. We have people everywhere, and we are more than happy to help you. Right now, we've got well over 100 people who are vetted very carefully. So you can trust that when they come into your home or when they're on the phone with you, you're dealing with good people that you can trust. Otherwise, I wouldn't have them there. The first goal and the first responsibility of the foundation is always to the families we serve, to the people we serve. Nothing comes before that.
Now, Chris, your grandparents were groundbreaking in the fact that they were the couple that put paranormal investigating on the map. I mean, there were some people before them, obviously, but they were the ones, you know, that kind of, especially here in the United States, they're the ones that everybody kind of, you know, if you mention paranormal, Ed and Lorraine Warren always pop up. They do now. And that's because of all the movies and everything that's brought them to the forefront. You know, so for us, people that are kind of in the distance and we're in the field, you know, we kind of hold their name in high regard. But you grew up,
you know, around them. And, you know, so as we see Ed as a demonologist and Lorraine as a medium and this dynamic couple that went out on the lecture circuits and went into all these homes, they were grandpa and grandma to you. I've seen you post pictures recently of like their wedding and some pictures of Ed in his military clothing and his uniforms. And it's just like, it's funny to see a different aspect of them from than what we're used to seeing. You know, they're just grandpa and grandpa to you. So how did that?
They're just people. Everybody who wants to put them on a pedestal or who wants to vilify them, they're just people. And, you know, we all have feet of clay. We all have made mistakes. When you look at videos of my grandparents, you're seeing a static moment in time. You are not seeing them. You're not seeing who they became. You're not seeing who they were before that. You're not seeing the influences that they had on them. And this is a field of research. It's not a religion. Nobody should be staying static in their beliefs. You adapt to the evidence you're given. When my grandparents started out back in about 47, 48, they didn't even believe in demons. And I'll let you in on a secret. Yeah, I'm an exorcist. I don't believe in demons. I don't. I have been lucky enough to study all over the world, from Africa and the Middle East and Europe to South America and Asia. And these entities, whatever they are, manifest differently based on the culture. I believe they are something called a thought form or a tulpa or an egregore. They are spirits, but they are spirits created by us. And they take on a life of their own. They can become very, very dangerous, and they can kill. We've had two cases where people were killed while under possession. And I take this incredibly seriously. This is deadly work. It's not for everyone. I know I'm going off on a tangent here, but I am not a fan of the idea of paranormal unity, for instance. You know, the idea that just because you're fascinated by the paranormal, I should say, yeah, go right ahead. That's like saying I'm fascinated by surgery. Okay, here's your scalpel. No, learn how to do it right. You know, have a code of ethics. Make sure you're there for the right reasons. We don't go out just searching for EVPs and crap like that. We're out there helping people. One of our rules is, if you're not there to help, you shouldn't be there at all. If you want to be there to help spirits, great. More power to you. I agree with that. You know, spirits are people too. But if you're out there calling yourself a researcher and all you're doing is going in there to stir things up so you can get your 2-second video of something flying or, you know, of something supposedly saying something to you on an EVP, do you think those spirits want to perform like trick ponies? They're looking for help. You know, or maybe they just want to be left alone. So our focus is much different, and we're there to actually make a difference in the world.
And I think that's the way it should be done. You know, I've often been critical on this show of some of the ghost hunting shows, and one in particular that likes to antagonize. And I just, it's all about respect as far as I'm concerned. So if I say I don't like the way somebody handles themselves in the paranormal world, it's normally because it's a lack of respect involved. And so I'm glad to see that that's the approach that you take.
Let's
go back to your early days. Obviously, you were kind of taken under your grandfather's wing and taught at an early age kind of what was going on. I know I've heard you say before that you didn't get a chance to participate as soon as you probably would have liked to, but you got to see a lot, you got to learn, and you even got to meet one of the exorcists that were involved in the Roland Doe exorcism, which obviously the movie The Exorcist was based on. Tell me a little bit about that first.
When I was 14, my grandparents started taking me on their lecture tours. And those were an opportunity for people who were in trouble to come after the show and talk to my grandparents and get the help they actually needed. So it was a great platform. When we were in, I think we were in Ohio at the time, one of those three exorcists came up and just introduced himself, explained who he was. And obviously the movie is far different than the reality. There were three exorcists involved. None of them were killed, and it was successful. So it was a real privilege and an eye-opener for me. I used to see my grandmother do things with her abilities that made me think, my God, she's a mutant. You know, it's just like, how on earth could she know this stuff? I am a psychic, but I do not trust psychics at all because they're often wrong. Even the best psychic, you know, it's remarkable when they get things right. But if you don't have evidence to back up what a psychic is telling you, then don't believe it, because they can take you down the rabbit hole so fast. Be very careful. My grandmother, for instance, you know, this scene at the beginning of Conjuring 3 where my grandfather's standing by during an exorcism and he has a heart attack?
Yes.
Okay. That actually happened, but not on that case. That happened in the Maurice Thériault case. And I was there. I was the one protecting the Archbishop. I was standing between him and Maurice. And at the time, just before the exorcism started, my grandfather was complaining about indigestion and he didn't feel quite right. And my grandmother, the great psychic, said, well, have a banana, Ed. Maybe you're low on potassium. You know, she couldn't see what was really happening to him because she had an emotional attachment and it would have been too terrible for her to see that. You know, when a psychic's emotions are involved, their credibility goes down to very, very, very little.
You finally got a chance to jump in and work your first case with your grandparents back in the summer of 1980 in Lee, Massachusetts. Tell me about that case.
I was 16 years old, and you got to understand, I had been afraid of the dark my entire life, terrified, because I knew there were things there. I could sense them. I could hear them whispering to me. And my family, my mom especially, actually both my parents, my mom hated the paranormal. She wanted nothing, still wants nothing to do with it. You know, the Judy Warren character is nothing like my mother. But my father, on the other hand, did not believe in the paranormal at all. He didn't believe in God. So they instead brought me to psychologists, therapists, social workers, anything they could to help me. And that's how I grew up. But by the time I was 16, my grandfather said, all right, enough's enough. I'm going to take him on a case. And my mom, for some reason, which I will never understand, said, yeah, okay, you can. And it was this over-the-top poltergeist case. It had started out, they had moved into the house, a husband, wife, and the two girls. And the night they arrived, they had inherited it from his uncle, and as they were going to bed, a little boy in a white suit appeared in the bedroom door, and he looked at them and he said, where do all the lonely people go? I mean, that's a line from Eleanor Rigby, so I'm like, I always thought that was weird. But they were devout Catholics. And so they called up their priest to have the house blessed. Now, there's a part of this story I don't remember well. I don't know how we got this information, but supposedly this little boy had been the twin brother of the uncle, and they had been horsing around in a horse-drawn carriage, and he had fallen out of the carriage and under the wheels, and he was killed. So they felt really bad, and they wanted to help him pass over. So the priest came in, blessed the home. From that night on, the little boy was gone, but this hulking black shape appeared. Now, the husband worked overnight in a mill there in Lee. And that night, the girls were in their separate bedrooms, and this hulking thing came into the bedroom, picked up the rosary beads that were on the bedpost, and twirled them around as if to say, "You think these are going to stop me?" The woman ran out of the bedroom, and as she was reaching for the bedroom door of one of the girls, I think at that point is when the door would not open. There were no locks, but the door would not open. The pull down stairs to the attic came smashing down on her head and knocked her out. Once she got up again, she was able to open the doors, get the girls out, and they escaped. Now things started to fly around, including large appliances, and they removed most of the furniture. When we arrived, it was just me, my grandfather, and a man named Paul Bartz. He worked at the University of Connecticut, and he also was an assistant to my grandfather. The husband and wife were sitting outside, and they wouldn't go in until we got there. It was already night by the time we got there. As we entered, the whole house was shaking from the pounding on the walls. I have never, still to this day, heard this kind of pounding. It was like sledgehammers hitting the walls. And it was coming in repetitions of three, which for my grandfather always was a sign of the demonic. The downstairs only had the kitchen and the living room. In the living room, there was a recliner and a sofa. In the kitchen, the stove was still there. I believe the refrigerator had already been removed. As we went up the stairs, the walls are literally shaking from the pounding, and I can hear clawing and growling from the walls. As I peer around the corner at the top of the stairs, the pull down stairs to the attic have been pulled down. And I look in the bathroom, and I'm sorry, I'm laughing, but it was just so stereotypically Hollywood. The crucifix was turned upside down. I was like, okay. Remember, I'm terrified of the dark. My grandfather says, "Okay, Chris, I want you to sit in the master bedroom in the dark and wait for something to happen. We're going to go downstairs and light holy church incense and religiously provoke this thing to reveal itself."
Yeah, I'm what like, could go wrong?
What? So for an hour, I'm sitting there, and there is clawing right behind me in the wall, and the growling and the pounding still going on. I'm like, "Gramps, I hear this. Gramps, I hear that." He's like, "Okay, Chris, you let us know if anything else happens." And they're smudging downstairs with Holy Church incense. But every single time they try to bring the pot up the stairs, it goes out. Now, if you know anything about this stuff, once you get it going good, it doesn't go out.
Right.
So they gave up. They put it on the stovetop, and Paul Bartz came up and relieved me, and I went back downstairs. The woman and I, it was about midnight by this point, we ran out the front door to go get sandwiches for everyone. Because like I said, the refrigerator wasn't there anymore, etc. And then we were on an overnight radio program with Brian Dow, WTIC AM radio 1060 out of Hartford, Connecticut. Still remember that. And it was an all-night show. We were on the radio through our phones. And now the pounding had stopped once the radio show got started, which I thought was weird. But at 3 o'clock, Paul and the husband were upstairs in one of the girls' rooms on the princess phone. My grandfather and the woman were sharing a phone on the couch, and I was in the recliner on another phone with a big crucifix that they happened to, oh, I guess it must have been the one I never put that together. It must have been the one that was in the bathroom, because it was this big crucifix. And we're in pitch darkness. And under my breath, I'm saying, by the power of Jesus Christ, I command you to be gone. By the power of Jesus Christ, I command you to be gone. Well, I'm scared of out of my mind. And these two hulking black shapes come down the stairs, and they're standing on the landing. Yes, it was pitch black, and you could still see them. The woman, it's now approaching 3:15. The woman screams that her face is on fire. Remember, we're still on the radio. My grandfather flashes the flashlight on her, and as we look, on her, the left side of her face, three claw marks appear, and blood drips down onto her chest. At that moment, that pot with the Holy Church incense in it flies out of the kitchen, around the corner, straight at me, just missing my head, hitting the window behind me, and the shade flies up. The pot crumples, and the window didn't break. The woman's screaming, she wants out of the house. The lights are flashing on and off. I'm like, this is a great idea. Let me help you. So I run to the front door, and that door that we had just been through to get sandwiches is now unable to be opened. At that point, the chair I just vacated a few seconds ago flips over and comes across the room at me. And then the door opens by itself. We got out of the house, just the two of us, leaving my grandfather sitting there in the dark, calmly talking on the phone, explaining to the public what is going on. One of us got physically ill outside. I cannot remember which of us threw up, but that was my first night on a case. And the weird thing is, the amazingly good thing is, having confronted my fears, having had my baptism of fire, so to speak, I went home and I went to bed for the first time in my life without the lights on. I've never been afraid of the paranormal again.
See, I think I would have probably had the exact opposite reaction. I would have probably had extra lights and maybe some floodlights in there, my phone flashlight on.
You know, the thing is, I honestly believe when you immerse yourself, when you confront your fears, you can overcome them. If all you do is try to fight against your fears your whole life, you'll never get there. You have to literally surround yourself in what you fear, and you can overcome it. You can realize that you can survive that. You can survive anything.
Probably good wisdom advice for most of us to follow. I want to ask you a couple of questions about you personally, but I would be... I think the people listening in our audience would be surprised if I didn't at least ask one more question about your grandparents before we move on. You know, anytime you're a public figure, especially when you've amassed the fame that the Warrens have, you're going to get a lot of praise, but you're also going to have your critics. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people be critical of them in the past. I've never heard anybody, I don't think, say that they were fake. I think that most people genuinely believe in their abilities. What I've heard, though, and determined, and I'll be lying if I hadn't said I've been a little critical in the past. I've heard people use the term opportunist, if that makes sense, that sometimes they embellished situations for sake of getting book deals or something like that. That's typically the criticisms that I've heard. You're close to the situation. I mean, when you hear criticisms like that, like maybe they pushed the envelope a little with the Amityville situation and maybe, you know, had the Lutzes maybe add a little bit to the story for the sake of a book deal, or maybe the Perrins situation when it came to their situation. What is your response when you hear criticism like that?
I have a lot of responses. Let's first deal with those two cases you mentioned. Andrea Perrin wrote three books on her case. My grandparents had nothing to do with those books. To be quite honest with you, my grandparents never mentioned that case to me once in their entire lives. It was not a big case to them. So they had no influence over that. I think from what I understand, the movie was pretty good. The others, not so great, to be quite honest. The details are very Hollywood and ridiculous. And even in the first one, my grandfather performing an exorcism never happened. Never happened. As for the Amityville case, again, my grandparents had zero to do with the book, The Amityville Horror. Nothing. They were brought in by Channel 5 News to evaluate whether or not this was a haunting. Now, and they had nothing to do with what the Lutzes were putting out there. Now, the Lutzes, I believe, were very real, very terrified people. They never made a penny off of those books. As a matter of fact, their son is horribly damaged, Christopher. I was in the jungle in Colombia, sitting next to a grass hut using a solar-powered router, having a conversation with this guy as he's threatening me because he thinks I make Amityville movies. And once I was able to calm him down and let him understand, I have zero to do with Hollywood. He then was talking about how he's part of this motorcycle group that helps trafficked women. And turns out the truth is he's wanted by the FBI for exactly that, trafficking women. He is a very damaged person. George and Kathy are no longer with us. I don't know what I can tell you other than I've met them. They seem very sincere. They came to my grandparents' house for a picnic once. That's the only time I've ever met them. I was a kid. I played with their kids. Chris probably doesn't remember that. Now, having said all of that, you just heard my first case. So you know that these cases can be very terrifying. Having said that, my grandfather could embellish. He could change details. And I was like, why are you doing that when this case was already unbelievable? Why would you do that? No answer. Never got a good answer. My grandmother, she could be forgetful. Remember, they worked thousands of cases. So have I. And I can tell you from my own experience, I couldn't tell you about more than maybe 100 of my cases, if that, because I'm too busy working on what I'm working on now to think about the past. I can remember the early ones only because they were so different to me. They were brand new and that burned in my memory, but the rest, not so much. They're books. Honestly, Satan's Harvest was written by two Boston Globe reporters. That's a good one. The Devil in Connecticut, again, a good one. The Demonologist, a good one. They're snapshots in time. They're not, you know, I just was rereading The Demonologist and I was like, boy, they're really amping up the fear factor here, you know? And it's like, that's not how I would do it. You know, we're here to minimize fears. You know, we want to empower people to understand that they really do have more control than they think. And I get it, you know, they had to reach the public. They had to reach people who needed help. And this was their vehicle for doing it, publicity. We don't do that. We have the internet. We don't need to do that. My grandfather and I used to argue about it all the time. I respect them both. I love them both. But it doesn't mean I agreed with them both. More often than not, I agreed with my grandmother. That woman was an angel and a saint. My grandfather was more bellicose, more belligerent, more type A personality. And I do believe that the ego sometimes went to his head once he got attention. I think what you need to remember, though, is that for the first 20 years that they were investigating, there were no books, there were no lectures, there was nothing. They did this solely to help people and to understand what was out there. And even their very first lecture was a benefit for the local historical society in Monroe, Connecticut, where they lived. You know, they were showing their paintings and talking about the stories behind the paintings. Then they started, they got this big case in 1973 in Lindley Street in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And that one they did go public with very quickly because it was so big. It was a big poltergeist case.
That's my favorite one, by the way.
It was an extraordinary case, you know? But the police, even though they witnessed the stuff, I mean, hell, a black cat came up the stairs in front of, I think it was a policeman, a priest, and possibly a firefighter from the basement and said, go to hell, you know?
But and it sang Jingle Bells.
I didn't know that one.
Yeah, it supposedly sang Jingle Bells.
Okay. The police did blame it on the girl. And so, because honestly, the whole region of Bridgeport was locked down. There were so many cars on the street who wanted to see this house. The house is still there. You know, I've driven by it on my way to the local hospital where I was born. But that was the one where they went public and they got really known. It helped them get more cases. So that was a good thing, you know, but I have never sought the limelight. This is something I only do now because I have no choice. I need to do this if I'm going to reach the public, if I'm going to help people. Our second goal in the foundation is to educate the public. It's to help minimize fears and help people understand that those footsteps are not the devil, you know, relax, take it easy. We'll help you with it, but please don't jump to conclusions, especially terrifying conclusions. And also because I see the TV shows and the TikTok videos and the YouTube people who are out there, Wild West cowboys trying to get their moment of fame and their clicks and likes. It pisses me off, you know? They are taking advantage of families and then leaving them behind. And we will never do that.
Tell me a little bit about an average case that you guys would get at the foundation.
Oh, the average case is going to be either psychological or just fear-induced. There's nothing to it. That's the average case. 90% of what we get, we can happily explain to them, you don't have to worry, this is what's happening. I don't even consider us paranormal researchers. I consider us paranormal social workers. We're here to help you get the resources you need. When we look at a case, we don't just look at the phenomena that's happening because that's a symptom. We have to look at the root cause. So we're looking at the underlying issues that make you and your family vulnerable. Now, it could be as simple as you've walked into the wrong house, but a lot of people can go into that house and never be attacked. So are we dealing with past traumas, PTSD, mental illness, drug abuse, domestic violence? What needs to be treated to help strengthen you so that we can then help you with the paranormal side of it? This to us is a profession. This is something we take extremely seriously. It's God's work. Now, having said that, please don't get me wrong. We are not a Christian organization. We are a non-denominational organization that will help anybody in the world. And my grandparents were the same way. They worked with Shinto Buddhists. They worked with Muslim clerics. And we have people from every walk of life in the foundation. Because if we're not helping according to your faith, then you're not going to have faith that we're helping. And it's not going to work.
I think it's interesting that you point that out because, I mean, so many times, you know, you see the classic exorcism movie and it's almost always the, you know, it's the Catholic Church in there. But, you know, what happens if you're in India and you've got an issue, what is a situation, you're not necessarily going to call in a Catholic priest, you know, you're going to probably need something Hindu or whatever the situation is.
There are exorcism rites in every great religion in the world, and they all work. My experience has been that God listens to everyone. He doesn't care what your path is to God. As long as you're displaying the faith and you're respecting the basic lesson, which is have empathy and compassion for others, be loving to others. You know, going back to the idea of fear, to me, fear is the real enemy. Fear of the unknown, fear of the other, you know, whether it be the spirit in your room or the brown person down the street or the guy on the other side of the border, you know, we are all the same. All the same. I live currently in Colombia in South America. I'm going to Ecuador next month. In the last 4 months, I've lived in Peru, Spain, Portugal, Scotland, Brazil, Costa Rica, spent extended period in Mexico. People are amazingly wonderful. They're open. There are good people everywhere. And there are bad people everywhere. And to judge someone based on their religion or their culture or what have you is ignoring the basics. Everybody loves their family. Everybody just wants to take care of themselves and those they love. You know, I believe it was the Dalai Lama, but it might have been Mahatma Gandhi who said, there's enough for everyone in the world, but there's not enough for everyone's greed. You know, and I would prefer that people learned instead of judging through ignorance. And that includes ignorance of things online. You know, it's a shame that people feel that they can attack what they don't know. You know, when I posted those photos of my grandparents on their wedding and on their 50th wedding anniversary, the number of people who thought I wasn't who I am was extraordinary, when it's so easy to just Google me. It's like, you're not grandson. Judy Warren doesn't have any children. I'm like, well, Judy Spira, her real name, has two children, has four grandchildren, and a great-grandchild. So that's the reality.
Talk to me a little bit about exorcisms. You acknowledge that you don't necessarily believe in demons.
I don't.
So what type of entity would invade a person to where they would need an exorcism, and what separates that type of entity from any other entity that's out there? What would make somebody, what would make a spirit be able to just enter into someone where an exorcism would be needed?
First off, I want to make it very clear that possession is incredibly rare. Incredibly rare. I've been doing this, as you mentioned, since 1980, going on 43 years this summer, this August. And I have done, I'm five, somewhere between five and seven exorcisms. I have assisted on several others, but not many. In total, I've probably only been around a dozen. And that's important. What can it be? Well, in the Maurice Thériault case, my grandfather even originally thought it was the father. And when we had gone to the grave site, you have to understand his father had murdered his mother and then himself. And because my grandfather thought the father was the one attacking him, he asked Maurice to go to the grave site and tell him he loved him and that he forgave him. Maurice was doing that and crying in front of his dad's grave. And I watched Maurice get punched so hard under the chin that it lifted him off the ground and flew back on his, straight on his back about 10 feet. And you heard the whop. I mean, it was loud. And so I believe a human spirit can possess a person. I also believe that these entities that we create can possess a person. Now, having said that, if you go back in time and you look at old videos of mine, or even, God help me, way back in time, if you're able to ever find the Geraldo interview.
I've seen it.
Have you? Oh, please, yes. Send it to me, because I haven't seen it since 1990. I would love to see it. But that does not reflect where I am today. At that time, my grandfather had decided, yes, Chris, you're a demonologist. And by the time I hit 26, I said, nope, I'm not a demonologist. I don't know what the hell a demon is. I know what it's not. You know, we have all these demonic names and stuff. Most of these are ancient Babylonian and Sumerian deities that we literally demonize. And that is not what they are. They are not that. I know also that free will is the central gift from God. So if you're praying that you can change someone's mind, or God's going to change someone's mind for you, it's not going to happen. God will not interrupt free will. God can help you on your path. He can help you going the right way. But he can also make it a lot harder for you if you're going the wrong way. And I think these entities, whatever they may be, and believe me, you know, like I said, I used to believe that they were demons. Then I used to believe that maybe they're these alternate dimension energy beings, because the evidence kind of pointed to their energy manipulation and things of that nature, that they didn't seem to be attached to time the way we are. But I've never seen them display the wisdom of the ages. I've seen them speak in languages occasionally that the person doesn't know, or display knowledge they couldn't know, but not the wisdom of the ages. And they are repetitive in the phenomena that they use. Now, if I, yet only 58 years old, can figure out new and novel ways to use these supposed abilities, then why can't they? Why do they keep doing the same things over and over again? It's not because it's effective. They've attacked me again and again and again over the years in the same way. I'm like, seriously? Just back off. You're not going to get to me. You know, so that to me means this is a human projection. This is something. You wouldn't believe the number of people that tell me Astaroth or Legion is after them. Because those are the names that have entered the public consciousness. It's the same thing with people who see manifestations of the Slender Man. When Slender Man was created online by Creepypasta, by someone in Creepypasta, back in like 1990, you know, the truth is we can manifest things. And we have amazing power. And when we understand that, then we have more control. That's the thing I've learned in every single religion I've studied, whether it be Kimbanda, Umbanda, Hinduism, Islam, Judaism, Christianity. When you don't set up psychic boundaries through ritual and faith and intention, then those things can get out of control and cause you harm. That's why things like exorcism rites work. I am using my free will. I'm using a ritual to focus my intention and my faith, and I'm calling on God to help. And that's why that works.
Awesome. You know, you mentioned...
Sorry, I'm long-winded as hell. I apologize.
No, you're good, brother. Hey, they're tired of hearing me talk. I want my guests to speak when they're on. So you talked about manifesting things. I mean, I don't think there's, Slender Man's the perfect example. And I'd say second is probably Dybbuk boxes. I mean, yeah. They're a complete hoax.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
and hell, look at the satanic panic of the 80s. You know, mm-hmm. Hysteria is an amazing thing. Salem witch trials. We can cause an awful lot of harm through fear. Just look at politics today throughout the world. Fear is used as a weapon to manipulate the populace. And people are not encouraged to actually educate themselves. They go to platforms that reinforce their fears. And that's a terrifying thing. And I don't care if you're a liberal or a conservative. If you're only going to a platform that reinforces your own beliefs, then you're not getting the truth. Look at the truth. Be a critical thinker. You know, and that includes the paranormal. Don't go in there with a psychic who says, oh, it's this. And so all you're doing is searching for evidence that it's that. No, look elsewhere. Expand your view. Don't even listen to the psychic at first. You know, you shouldn't be listening to the psychic. You should go out on your own first, see what you find, and then compare notes.
I'm talking to Chris McKinnell, the director of the Warren Legacy Foundation for Paranormal Research. Chris, it's been an absolute blast. Tell everybody how they can get in contact with the foundation if they need to, and where they can follow you and the foundation on social media.
Absolutely, my pleasure. First, we have a website you can go to, www.warrenlegacyfoundation.com. You can also try warrenfiles.com, warrenlegacy.com, all of those work. And contact us link. From there, there's a Google link. You just fill that out. And there's one for joining us, and there's one for requesting help. Our help is all free. It's all confidential. We will never expose you to the public. You can find me on Facebook. I prefer you look for me on my personal profile page, simply because I'm not terrific at social media. And even though I do have two other, I guess you'd call them professional profiles or something, I don't really deal with those. There is TikTok, Instagram, etc. Those are run by other people for me. So, you know, yes, they're nice. You can also find the Warren Legacy Foundation on Facebook, which is a good resource. I actually highly recommend that as our probably our best platform. We have the Warren Files. If you search the Warren Files on YouTube, you will find about 100 videos where we talk about our cases, my grandparents. We talk about how to protect yourself psychically, how to deal with investigations on a basic level. Please don't watch our videos and think you've learned how to become a researcher. The number of people who watch Ghost Adventures and all of these other crappy shows and think that they can then go out and do it that way, you're going to get yourself hurt. You know, it's like watching an episode of ER and thinking you can go out and perform surgery. You cannot. You know, I have done this for decades and I am still only a student. I am not an expert. Nobody is. And if anybody tells you differently, they're either lying to themselves or they're lying to you. We do have a Warren Files episode tonight. It's basically the basics on how to conduct an investigation. It starts at 8 o'clock Eastern time. You can find it on YouTube and on Facebook, and check it out. I'll be there and we'll answer your questions.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm pretty sure the Warren Files is where I saw the video with Geraldo. I think it was in a clip of maybe the episode where you talked about that first case. I think there was a clip of that in there. That's where I saw that at. Pretty sure.
Oh, the Geraldo thing?
Yes, the Geraldo thing. I think it was clip.
It wouldn't have been in my first case. Yes, it would have been, only because that's the only photo I have of the demon.
Yes, that's what it was. It was a picture of the demon that was had a lamp behind it, and it was backlit, and he was talking about that picture. That's what it was.
Yeah, that black monk-like shape. That was it. That's the thing.
Interesting. Awesome, brother. It was a blast, man. This is I appreciate you spending some time with us and sharing some stories of your grandparents and of your personal travels and the Warren Legacy Foundation.
My pleasure, Jerry. And again, if anyone needs help, we are here to help. God bless you. And thank you again, Jerry, for this opportunity.
You're welcome. All right, guys, that wraps it up for this week. Chris was a super fun guest. Can't wait to do the other special
segment we have with him coming up. So,
yes, you guys have a safe 4th of July. Don't blow anything off. And you all have a blessed week. We love y'all.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.